Hi, I'm Brandon Poe, founder of Poe Group Advisors and creator of the Accounting Practice Academy. You are listening to the Accountant's Flight Plan podcast, where we talk about stuff in the accounting world. If you're looking to buy or sell a practice, we are the premier accounting practice intermediary firm in the industry. Check us out at poegroupadvisors.com. If you're a firm owner looking to build a more profitable practice while actually reducing owner hours, sign up for our practice management workshop, which only runs a few times per year. Learn more at accountingpracticeacademy.com. Welcome to the Accountant's Flight Plan podcast. I've got another team member as a guest today, Lawrence Ball. And so I'm really excited about today's podcast. And just a little bit about Lawrence. She's been in business development and account management for over 15 years. She began her career in New York, in Manhattan, working for a wholesale company where she successfully grew her clients into multi-million dollar revenue streams in just 4 years. She's passionate about building strong long-term client relationships and providing a holistic approach toward the selling process. She's worked in a range of different industries, from drones to wholesale to home decor and travel technology. She's been in startups and helped with optimizing processes, building strategic services, and developing forecasting tools and implementing financial reports. She's been with Poe Group since 2019, and she has really discovered a passion for guiding sellers and buyers too through the process of that transition. So welcome, Lawrence.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I always like to start by letting our guests tell the audience like how they got to doing what they're doing. So you want to tell the story about how you came to work with us?
Yeah. So I was actually working in a travel company, so very different, but I wanted to kind of get into something more in the like financial sector, but wasn't sure exactly what yet, and had told several friends and family members, and then through a mutual connection, they had mentioned that you were looking for a new broker. So then that's when we started talking. You kind of described what y'all did and how you help, you know, sellers find the right buyer and sell their firm. And so once we started talking, just kind of worked out really well. And now, as I was just saying to you, but this is going to be my career, which is exciting because I've had very different industries. I worked in very different industries, but really enjoy what I do and find it very fulfilling.
Well, I mean, you took to it right away, and it's been, you know, it's been fun, and you've had some really interesting deals since you've been with us, and you know, it's 5 years in, so you've got a great bit of experience now, and so I want to talk to you a little bit about sort of best and worst, or maybe not best and worst, easiest and toughest. Let's call it that.
Okay. Yeah.
Let's talk about maybe the easiest deal you've had and kind of what went into that.
Yeah. So easiest deals, I think, it, as far as like generally, right, the better the firm is, the more popular they usually are, the more buyers you have. So as far as like being able to find the right fit, that really helps because you just have multiple buyers. So we did have an amazing firm recently, and they were doing about 1.3 in revenue, 60% cash flow to owner hours less than 1,000. And that owner was also really open to talking to a lot of buyers. We end up having 11 offers on that firm. So it was pretty crazy. I would say the negotiating, that made my life definitely easier. But it was nice because it made it so where I kind of talked to the seller, like all things being equal, you know, because he could really kind of demand what price he wanted, you know, who was the best fit. And so even though it was a cloud firm, it ended up actually being a buyer who was like right down the street, maybe like 15 minutes away. And they were just like a really great match. And the buyer was one of the most organized buyers I've actually seen. And they were, you know, perfect together, and ended up doing a deal together, and the owner actually kept a small percentage because he believed in the buyer so much and knew that he was going to just continue to grow and make it very successful. So.
Nice. Yeah, I remember that one. It was easy, but we had a scheduling challenge. Like, it was hard to schedule all the buyers
It was
and
hard to keep up with them because we were a little inundated with so many. It was
yeah.
just such a great firm. But yeah, Carol for being like, there were at least like, I don't even remember how many buyers a day were coming to try and schedule a meeting, and it moved very quickly too.
Yeah, it was. I remember the scheduling challenge, and yeah, that's a good problem to have. If you're selling your firm and you can't keep up with all your buyers, that's an awesome problem to have.
Yeah, and I think it just shows too, like when sellers have their like processes in place and they have really strong employees that, they really can get amazing deals, get amazing buyers, and it just makes it easier in ways to find the right person, right?
Yeah.
Because you just have such a demand.
Yeah, you want to make your practice more marketable, just build a better firm. Those are the easiest to sell. That's what we always tell
Yeah,
people
and I
who
know we've talked about like one thing I always find interesting is actually like the less that you work in your practice, like the more money you can usually get for your practice. Like I think, as far as like the things that buyers really look at the most, a lot of times it's clearly cash flow, but also owner hours, especially there are a lot of buyers out there looking to buy multiple firms. So if you have lower owner hours, then they can really take it and expand.
Yeah, exactly. There's capacity there, and a lot more buyers can jump in and buy that firm. So let's turn the page and talk a little bit about your toughest deal. And we talked a little bit about this before, hitting the record button today, but I remember this deal. It was tough on it was a tough one. So yeah,
Yeah.
I'll without further ado, tell us about that
Yes.
one.
So this was, it was actually a four owner firm, but two owners own the majority by far. And so there was definitely a good amount of interest in it. Great location, great firm, strong cash flow. But they ended up going with a private equity buyer. And so that was definitely different. We did get the private equity to go straight to a contract. So I think that really helped to get some of the agreements up done up front. But there were a lot more agreements that had to be worked out because also one of the owners was younger and wanted to keep a percentage of the firm. So I mean, we had to do operating agreement. I think that was over like 50 pages. And with private equity, there's just every like detail is being thought out. And I mean, we were even looking at negotiating, okay, like if something happened, worst case scenario, where does the percentage go to? Who does it fall to? So that one,
Meaning
I think I
debt,
was,
meaning if somebody died, you
yeah,
had
if
to.
somebody died, who does the ownership go to? All those things had to be really thought out. And I think I was talking to the buyer and seller like once a day, probably every day for 3 or 4 months to get it to fully close. Yeah.
Yeah, and they brought a third party in for due diligence, if I recall, and the due diligence was pretty intense and.
There was over probably 100, 150 due diligence items, which I think for, some other type of deals, normally CPA deals are not nearly as complicated, right? Normally we see maybe like 10 to 20 due diligence items. It can be a little bit more depending on the type of firm, but this was a lot more extensive.
Yes, and it was this private equity firm's first purchase, was it not?
Yes, it was.
So that was the other thing. I think some private equity buyers out there have bought multiple firms and they sort of know the ropes, but if it's their first one, it's they it takes a little breaking in of the buyer, so to speak.
Yeah, there was like third party due diligence, 30 third party lawyers. There's another third party, like compliance team or something. I'm trying to remember. But yeah, it was, I mean, and it, I do think it goes to show a testament. And this is why in our process, I think it's so important. Like And I tell this to every buyer and every seller, like really to focus in the beginning on the foundation of, hey, does the buyer and seller really want to work together? Because I think if both parties are committed to each other, then we're going to make a deal happen and we're going to work it out and both people will be happy. So I think in this case, you could really tell they were committed to working with each other and excited too, because there's a lot of details to go over.
Yeah. Everyone has to be motivated to make the deal happen in those circumstances. So, yeah, exactly.
Hey all, Ian chiming in here again to let you know that we've announced the start dates for the 2024 sessions of Accounting Practice Academy. We're running it on May 24th, July 26th, and September 27th. APA, if you don't know, is an 8-week virtual workshop and an incredible resource for firm owners who need to get their hours down without affecting their bottom line. Most owners who take the workshop actually see a significant increase in profitability while reducing their hours. I know it sounds crazy, but dig into the workshop details on our website and check out some of our testimonials. So if you want to learn more, visit accountingpracticeacademy.com. Thanks for listening, and now back to the episode.
If you're a buyer or a seller,
Mm-hmm.
what are some of the top things that should be in mind, you know, kind of going into a deal? You kind of touched on one already. It's the fit. You know, it's everyone kind of starts off with feeling very strongly about the other party being the right party.
Yeah.
What are some other things that are important considerations?
I think for a buyer, I think it depends on what stage you are. So if you're a first-time buyer, I think really focusing on, you know, do you understand what type of firm this is, what type of clients they have? I remember my very first year, right? We did have one buyer who, even after close, like didn't understand how much bookkeeping there was in the firm, even though that was discussed and written. But I think they were more excited about the deal opportunity than really focusing on, hey, is this what I want to be doing? And what does the day-to-day look like? Right. So I definitely think for a first-time buyer, like trying to read as many, you know, kind of helpful articles, like we have plenty on our website, but just really getting to know the firm and what does it look like, you know, on a week to week. Is the owner client facing? Are they not? Things like that. So I think that's really important, right?
Yeah.
How many hours do they spend?
So let's dig into that just slightly, because I feel like one of the things that I have seen buyers do, buyers of all stripes, like first time, and maybe it's just the nature of accountants to some degree, is they like details. And so they want to come into a deal and start looking kind of from the bottom up. And I always say, no, look from the top down. Like, look at a high level, you know, is this the right fit? Are these the right clients? Before you start getting into too much detail. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I think when, you know, when people just are only looking at numbers, I almost think it's like a safe place because they understand those, right? But you really got to understand like the culture. Like, is this a firm that, you know, is more high energy, or they are going to sit with clients for an hour? I mean, I think even simple things like, hey, do they talk on to the phone all the time? I mean, I've had a buyer who's like, oh yeah, we don't talk on the phone. It's all email. And so if they're talking to a firm owner who, you know, they're used to, like, clients are used to, they can call anytime and the owner will answer. Well, that's not going to work. So I think understanding some of those big picture items instead of just, hey, does it have good cash flow, or, you know, what are the average fees? Like, if you're not focusing on some of those, then I do think it could, you know, it's not going to be the right fit.
Yeah. And a lot of times there's a feel to that, you know, that you just kind of feel like there's something that's off about the fit. And we tell our sellers and our buyers to pay attention to those sort of gut instincts.
Definitely.
So, all right. So I interrupted your train of thought. So what are some other things that buyers or sellers need to keep in mind coming into a deal?
For sellers, number one, and I know you say this on the podcast a lot, but I do think just making sure they're fully ready to sell, I think that's, you know, it is such a big life decision. So I think making sure they're ready. I think always too, like looking at different options and talking to people. Like one thing I've noticed is a lot of times sellers who have really excelled quick are in different like thought leadership groups. Whether it's like the local organization, but they also just have more of a pulse on what's going on, what is price, you know, what are other people pricing, whether it's in their own area or in different parts of the US. I think CPA owners are extremely personable. And so making sure that, you know, a buyer's going to fit in with their employees and their clients. One thing I tell sellers is, hey, if you think that you would like working for this buyer, that's a really good sign, right? So that's one thing I like to kind of say to them to see if they
Yeah, I like to tell sellers, like, if you really want to simplify the buyer selection process, and not that it should be this simple, but it can be a very first good place to start, is how do you think your clients are going to like this buyer? And how do you think your team is going to like this buyer? Those are a really good way to kind of simplify that decision making, because yeah, the no's kind of jump out to them. It's like, okay, this buyer's not going to work. This one will, this one might.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that's why too, in the beginning to talk to different types of buyers, because the no's actually help, I think, make the yeses stand out more. Right. Because
yeah.
If you just talk to, you know, you almost don't want to pick like the very first person you talk to. Although I have had buyers that fall in love with, or like sellers that fall in love with the very first one. But I do think it kind of like, it's going to make that buyer who's amazing stand out even more. You're like, this
Yeah.
person, my employees would love, my clients would love. So,
yes. It's just like, if you're going to hire somebody, you want to talk to as many candidates as you can. The more candidates you talk with, the more clarity you get about who's going to be good in that role. And this is really the same sort of setup, right?
It is.
Well, what do you think? You know, we talked a little bit about your private equity deal.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts about private equity coming into the accounting industry? Because we've seen over the last few years, it's definitely the level of interest from private equity has definitely gone way up.
I feel
up.
Like in the last 12 months, it's like 10x, even like I felt like they were coming in the last couple of years, but in the last 12 months have been so much more. I think I've done maybe like I've done a couple this year. I do agree with you. They're definitely a range of different types of private equity buyers. I do think it is a little bit tricky. I think it depends on the seller and if it's going to work. You know, a lot of times private equity, and again, they're all different, but a lot of times private equity wants sellers to stay on a little bit longer. So is a seller open to that? You know, I think it helps when they have run a CPA firm before and they know what they're doing. They have either resources to help, because right now, obviously, like employees are so hard to find and additional capacity is really difficult to find. So, but I do think they can bring a lot of like technology and experience and, you know, are very good at running companies. So it just ultimately depends on the seller and what they're looking for and if it's
Yeah.
going to work for their employees. But
Yeah,
yeah,
I would.
It's amazing how many more private equity have.
It's really picked up. And I would say you have to realize that if the private equity doesn't understand the industry very well, they might try to enter a deal with someone, but that doesn't mean they're going to close the deal or not, or that doesn't mean they might want to try to change the terms on the deal as they go through. Mm-hmm. And so I think you got to be very aware that there may be things that they don't know, and once they do know those things, it could be a real chance for them to say, look, we don't want to do this deal, or we don't want to do this deal for this price.
Mm-hmm.
So something
yeah.
to think about.
I agree. And I think what makes our job interesting is because we bring in so many different buyers, and I tell sellers this, right? Like you get to decide, like the deals of the terms of the deal may be different for different buyers. So there may be a private equity firm that you don't want to stay working for them. So you want it to be 1 to 3 months, where there could be then a buyer who's worked for the last 15 years in a big four and wants to be, you know, come out and start their own thing, that you think that they're going to be great, but need a little bit more support. So then maybe you're more open to working for them, but like less hours. So I think you can have, and that's what keeps my job interesting, is like, even with the same seller, like not every deal looks the same because it's all different types of buyers.
So it kind of reminds me of a tool that we have. It's a free resource that sellers can download. It's a guide, a seller's guide to evaluating buyers. And I'll put a link in the show notes. So if you're listening to this, if you just go to our blog page on our website and pull up this podcast, you'll see the show notes. But that's a really good tool because there are so many things to think about. You have to think about the buyer's experience, their character. There's just a lot of little nuances, and that's a really good tool for thinking about that.
And that's why we talk to like our sellers after every single call to go over who they liked, who they, well, I shouldn't say didn't, but why they didn't think someone was a good fit or why they did, right? And like, you know, you'd be surprised. Like, it really does help to take those notes, because especially sometimes there's a lot of buyers, and so trying to figure out, you know, who they want to move to the next stage with. And because sometimes, you know, they get offers, but if it's not the right fit, they're going to pass even with a strong offer, you know?
And if it's not the right fit, then the buyer might figure that out before closing, and you might not have a deal anyway. So there's that too. Well, let's turn the page. I've got a couple little final questions for you. What are you currently reading?
Currently, I'm reading Shoe Dog by Phil Knight, which is all about Nike and how they started, which is a
Most a
really
lot of people don't a lot of people know this, but Phil Knight was a CPA. I think he was a CPA
really
at Price Waterhouse.
forgot about that. Yeah, it's really interesting to, like, you know, especially so many like owners that we work with, right? But like all the trials and tribulations, and you think some things are just like overnight successes. And so it's interesting to hear about how many times he almost like completely failed, or, you know, the company almost ended, but how that persistence, I think persistence makes, is like the number one reason for success.
That's awesome. And while we're talking about books, what do you consider to be one of the most impactful books you've ever read?
I'm sure this is like a very popular one, but Atomic Habits. I just like the idea of habit stacking. I'm not even something simple like right after you brush your teeth and you drink a glass of water. But I do think, you know, habits make up so much of how you're successful. I saw something the other day that was talking about, you know, with, I think it was with runners, but it was like everyone has the same goal to win, right? But it's the people who have the best processes and that end up being the ones to win, right? Like, what are the processes and systems that get you to your goal?
Nice.
So, yeah, working on
Well,
some of those habits.
Lawrence, this has been a fun conversation, and we really kind of got into some interesting aspects of deal making, and I really appreciate your perspective, and you know, it's been a pleasure, and so yeah, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. It's been fun.
Thanks for listening to the Accountant's Flight Plan Podcast. If you like what you heard today, please follow us so that you can get updates when new episodes are released and share our podcast with your friends and colleagues. You can also follow Poe Group Advisors on social media. Please visit our website for more information at poegroupadvisors.com.